Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Gates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. It's been a while since we did a podcast, since what, Sunday after the Lions game, a week and a half ago.
I missed you, Spoon.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah, I didn't miss you guys.
No, I'm about not to even say, a little bit. Right?
You knew that already.
This is our relationship. I give and I give and yeah. He just takes.
I thought he was going to go stonewall face like, oh, you did? Okay, moving along.
Yeah,
you
right. Know?
But anyways, hopefully you guys did enjoy, you know, the bye week. Just a chance to recharge your bodies and your minds, too, just like the players would do.
I had the family up. That was nice.
Family
a little,
did?
A little R&R, and we went to the Bucks-Celtics game. Nice. Boy, are the Bucks hurting right now. This is not a Bucks podcast, but it was a fun game, and Giannis is a freak.
Yeah, no, sorry, JR. You know, Radcliffe, goodness. He was going to take the thunder talking about the Bucks on a podcast.
But it was fun. I took the kids and the parents. It was a fun time.
I covered state volleyball.
Yeah.
Over at the Rash.
Up here.
Yeah, it was good. Saw some good competition. Actually saw some, it was pretty incredible plays out there. And a little break, a little change of pace after doing football for, 9 weeks to mix it up. And Tom, I know you went on a top secret travel location.
Yes. some serious scouting,
So made it back in one piece.
I did.
So that's good.
Made it back. Yep. So it's all good now.
Good to see you and good to see you guys. And let's just jump into it, though. Since we last had a podcast, there's been some things that have kind of happened within the organization. And I guess we can start with Preston Smith. That was obviously the big news from since the bye week, was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, one thing that stood out to me when he talked with the Steelers, he talked a lot about, you know, the scheme and trying to find the scheme that he fit in with the three down linemen. So just to kind of get reactions from both of you guys, and starting with you, Ryan, just, you know, what was your reaction when you saw the news of Preston Smith, and just, you know, just the general observation of that?
Well, thank you for bringing up Preston Smith, because he was the big news nationally on Tuesday. It's a big shift in this locker room. You know, I kind of wondered right when the trade happened. Okay, it makes sense on the field because we talked about it. The snaps are going down, and it's not a lot of production. And yeah, the scheme. And I don't think he's the only one on that defensive line that has had a sluggish adjustment to this scheme. But he's an older guy, and get something for him. Put him in a 3-4 scheme. But the locker room. That's where my question was. This is a good locker room, but it's a really young locker room. And so I went in today to the locker room, first time since the bye, since the trade. It's day one post-Preston Smith, so it's still new. But I asked a lot of the guys, okay, what's this going to do to the locker room dynamic? Because he's one of the very few old heads that they had. And I don't think you can overstate enough how significant he was to the locker room dynamic. He, before every and after every game, he would pull the team aside. He was the one to deliver the team speech. Jaden Reed called him the heartbeat of the locker room. So there is a shift in that locker room. Now, I think sometimes we overstate the importance of the locker room. It does matter. What matters on the field is a lot more important, right? And a lot of times, if things are good on the field, you don't really have to worry about the locker room. Usually the field takes care of the locker room. Things are bad on the field, it's the inverse of that. You got to worry about the locker room at that point. So from a field standpoint, there's a lot of young guys, Spoon, that Brian Gutekunst wants to give snaps. And Preston Smith not being here allows that to happen. So we'll see what happens on the field. But they're going to have to replace him in that locker room for sure.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot, too, and break down some of those D-linemen and some of the guys, like what it means for, because we talked to them in the locker room, but also interested to see what happens with them on the field. As far as just, you know, your thoughts, Spoon, just on the news of Preston Smith heading to the Steelers, just what was your thoughts on it?
I thought it was a logical move in that he probably wasn't going to be with the team next year, given his contract. His production, nice, great player to have around, had a great career here. But at some point, you always have to move on. Mm-hmm. And I was a little surprised they could only get a seventh. But, you know, when you think about it, he's got a pretty big contract, you know, at least going into next year. And, you know, I think he needed a new setting. I think he's been a 3-4 guy his entire life, you know. And so all of a sudden he's thrust into a 4-3, and he's going to finish his career playing in a defense he's not really familiar with and not really shining in. I think it was a good move for him. I thought it was interesting that he said that he had asked for a trade a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame him. I really don't. I mean, he's lucky he got to go to a team that's in the playoff hunt, you know, and then he gets to play opposite TJ Watt, so he'll never be double teamed in his life. And of course, then he went out and had a sack and a tackle for loss in his first game, you know, so good for him. Yeah. I mean, I think it's great that he can finish his career. I don't think it's going to be devastating for the Packers. I think, you know, there's always a leadership issue there, but I think Xavier McKinney has kind of filled that void and become that guy for the Packers. And then it should allow some other guys to kind of, you know, start to pick things up for them too. You know, all in all, I mean, I wasn't totally surprised just because, like I said, the number of snaps were going down and his future wasn't, you know, secure here. So, you know, now it gives a guy like Aaron Mosby a chance to play. And I think they've been wanting to get him on the field a little bit. You know, they put him on the field finally for some of his first snaps. He gets a half a sack, you know. And so I think they need to find out what he can give them.
Yeah, when you look at Mosby, like I said, we talked with him in the locker room, and he mentioned like how big it could be for confidence when you're able to get a sack against a really good tackle from Detroit.
Yeah, Sewell, yeah.
So, I mean, just that's something that you can build off of. I mean, you saw him in preseason. He was one of those last few guys trying to fight for a roster spot. He had a good, you know, preseason finale, and he did really well. Just, you know, what could a guy like Mosby, and there's so many others, but just a guy like Mosby, what could he add to and bring to just a unit that is young, but like I said, there's still pieces there.
Yeah, he said that he was surprised to even be on the field. They just kind of threw him in there. He didn't really expect it and just did his best to transition speed to power, and he was able to do that against Penei Sewell, who's really, really good in pass pro. So it was a good moment for him. I think in general at the edge rush position, if you're a pass rusher, more snaps is very beneficial. More snaps are helpful to get into your rhythm. The more opportunities, the more swings at the plate, right? The more that you can kind of piece your moves together and play off your moves and use your full arsenal. So on down the line, I mean, I think it starts with Lucas Van Ness and unlocking him because they need to. He's the guy that has the first round tools, has not had first round production. There's nobody on that defensive line that, especially the edge rush, that could really make as big of an impact on this defense by just getting off the schneid as Lucas Van Ness. So you start there. But guys like Kingsley and Ibarri, Aaron Mosby, they're going to get more snaps now. They're young guys. It reminds me a lot of what Brian Gutekunst did a year ago when he traded Rasul Douglas, in no small part because he wanted to get Carrington Valentine some snaps. I mean, the difference now is that they are bona fide contenders, and back then they were in let's develop the young guys mode because they didn't look like that, like the season was going anywhere. But Brian Gutekunst believes in youth. He wanted a year ago to get Carrington Valentine on the field. It certainly helped out the defense. It helped out a young seventh-round rookie. It's very similar to what he wants to do with the edge this year.
Yeah, what more do you want to see from just that D-line group? Because I feel like there's so much more that you could see. But, you know, what do you want to – what are you observing when they get into this second half of the season?
Well, I mean, I think there's been a decent amount of pressure. You know, when you have 19 turnovers, that's – you know, some of that has to be related to pressure. Right. You know, when you've got 19 takeaways, 10 interceptions, you know, some of that is got to be credited to your front. But they need to be able to have some more pressure as a four-man you know, rush. When they rush forward, they got to get more pressure than what they're getting. And I do think it's been a transition for those guys. They were all drafted as 3-4 outside linebackers. That's what they were envisioned as being. That's what the personnel department viewed them as. And now they're 4-3 ends. And that's it's a different position. There's a little less freedom, you know, with pass rushes. They need to get up the field quicker. You know, I think Mosby offers something a little bit different. All their pass rushing guys are 6'4", 6'5", long levered, you know, guys who, you know, rely on their arm length and all of that. And Mosby's kind of a shorter guy. He gets under pads. He can kind of, you know, slip and slide around. Brenton Cox is kind of like that too. And so, you know, maybe that kind of a change up helps. You know, maybe Sewell had been going up against Preston Smith and Gary that whole game, and all of a sudden he gets a guy who's shorter, a little quicker, probably faster than any of the other guys. And I think he tripped on his guy next to him, too. But it's just a little different guy. And so I think that doesn't hurt to have that.
Yeah. What about for you, Ryan? Just what do you want to see more from this D-line after you went through this first half of the season? You know, what are you observing through the second half?
Getting home with 4, which was the original plan for Jeff Hafley coming into the season. And to Jeff Hafley's credit, as Spoon said, he has compensated and he's been creative to get pressure still with his scheme. But the ideal for any defensive coordinator is to get home with 4. You have more people in coverage. It's tougher for the quarterback when you can consistently get after him with 4 pass rushers, and they have not been anywhere near consistent enough with doing that. And I think it goes on down the line, right? Lucas Van Ness, I mentioned. Rashawn Gary, 2.5 sacks. That's not enough. Kenny Clark, not a single sack yet this season. I spoke with Kenny Clark today, and I think what his answer also pertains to Rashawn Gary. These are good football players. It's not like, and Kenny Clark said, it's not like I forgot how to rush the passer. Yeah. It's not like Kenny Clark and Rashawn Gary forgot how to rush the passer one season to the next. They've got a proven track record in this league. So that's not the difference. What's the difference? Well, they're in a new scheme now. So the question to me is how long can they get comfortable rushing in this 4-3? And the quicker they can do that, the more Jeff Hafley can play the defense that he wants to play, which is get after the quarterback with 4, they can't do it right now because they're not getting the consistent production up front. That's a big barometer on where this season can go. The other thing Kenny Clark did say is, you know, he's not sweating it. He's patient because the defense as a whole is playing very well. So they have that going for him. It's not like this is Joe Barry of the past couple of years and the sky is falling. This is a very solid, stout defense. It's just how much better could the defense be if that defensive line can finally get their bearings with this 4-3 scheme?
I feel like that's something, honestly, like you could say about the whole team, if they just do these little things better. I mean, they're 6-3, right? The sky is not falling. They're not, you know, in trouble or anything by those means. But, like, think about how much more different this team could look, and maybe even a couple more wins if some of those little things. Not missing a field goal, not having a penalty, not turning the ball, like so many things. But as you kind of put a ribbon on the first half of the season for you, Spoon, is there anything you learned, if any, about looking at this year's Green Bay Packers team?
Maybe that, you know, you can't just throw the same guys out on the field and expect the same success. Mm. They're not as good an offensive team. At least their passing game's not as good as it was a year ago. Their running game is better than it was a year ago. So they've kind of made up for it. But, you know, Jordan Love's numbers are actually better than they were from a year ago, except for interception percentage. And even that's not – I mean, he had 10 interceptions after 9 games last year. I don't know. I think the thing about the first half of the – season is that in some ways they're lucky to be 6-3 because Malik Willis came in and helped them out a lot. On the other hand, they've lost some ground to the Lions and the Vikings, who just keep winning and finding ways to win. You know, games the Packers couldn't find a way to win, the Lions did. You know, like Sunday night, you know, the Packers couldn't quite get over the hump against Philadelphia, and they could have, you know, they had a chance, and somehow, you know, Detroit figured out a way to get over the hump against Houston. Minnesota, you know, they throw three interceptions, Darnold throws three or four, I forgot, and they still beat Jacksonville. Yeah. So, you know, even in their worst games, they're still winning. And the Packers, when they've played some of their worst games, they've lost. So they got some ground to pick up because of that. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to win some of these games that are not going to be easy. You know, yeah. San Francisco's picking up. Mm-hmm. You know, Miami will probably be better by the time they face them. You know, there's some solid teams there. And the Packers have to go on the road to play Minnesota and Detroit. Yeah. So, you know, they kind of got their backs to the wall as long as Minnesota and Detroit don't screw anything up.
No, oh, yeah. I don't think those two are the same, though. This is just my opinion, but we say Detroit, I think Minnesota's falling off a cliff. I don't know. I know that they're going to have enough wins to get into the playoffs because their schedule is very weak down the stretch. But that is a team. I think Sam Darnold's regressing back to the mean. I think that they haven't been able to put it together against some really bad teams. They're winning. They're going to win. I think going to Detroit and going to Minnesota right now are very different. But what I'm curious, if you had to choose right now, where would you rank the final NFC North standings when this is all said and done? How do you think these four teams finish?
You want to go or you want to go first or?
Sure.
Obviously, yeah. Detroit. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, Detroit's the best team in the division.
Yeah, sure. So just talk 2, 3, and 4 at this point.
Right now, I think Minnesota's a better team right now. I haven't seen anything that tells me that the Packers are going to just explode onto the scene. Maybe they will, but I can only go by what I've seen so far, and the Packers have been a very inconsistent team. Minnesota has been outperforming what it should be, especially, you know, with a quarterback that isn't an established starter in the NFL. But they still have their defense. They still got Aaron Jones. They still have Justin Jefferson. The Packers don't have anybody like Justin Jefferson. You know, they do not have a player like that. And that makes a big difference. I think it's kind of a coin flip between those two. Detroit, coin flip there. And then, you know, the Bears are bringing up the rear.
Yeah, I had the Bears as a wild card pick before the season. And I think they're obviously going to finish fourth in the NFC North. I mean, that's just I can't imagine they're going to turn this thing around. The sky is falling in Chicago. But that, to me, they've got two games left against the Bears. That's very, very helpful, right? Because early season there was hope, there was optimism in Chicago, and that has all vanished. It is back to the same old bleak windy city that you're used to seeing. I think that's beneficial. I think it's Lions, Packers, Vikings, Bears. I think the NFC North gets three teams into the playoffs when we're all said and done.
I do too.
But I also think the Bears being the Bears now and being what they historically have been does make this a little softer of a division. Because they started, 4-2, and you're like, oh, goodness, there's not a weak team in this division. The Bears are the weak team now. Having two of those games, I think the Packers finish 6-2, no worse than 5-3. I'm a little higher, it sounds like, on them than you are, Spoon. But to me, it's a really young team that is kind of similar to last year. Spent the first half sifting through things, trying to figure things out. But there's so much darn potential on this team. I think they're much more talented. They don't have a Justin Jefferson. No. But holistically on the roster, I think they're much more talented than the Vikings. I think there's a lot of potential for them to kind of explode during the second half. I know just because it happened last year doesn't mean that it'll happen again. But I kind of see him making a run.
I guess the reason why I understand the optimism, because there's nothing from the first half of the season mistake-wise that was like glaring. It's like you need a spot here. It's like you need a new running back, or you need this, you need that, like,
and personnel.
Right, like, yeah. The pieces are in place for them to do what you said. So I guess I would understand where that optimism is, but I guess as far as, yeah, from the first half of the season to this point, because the Vikings won the head-to-head matchup, and at this point, you know, anything can happen the second half of the season. It probably will flip for me, Packers and Vikings, but it'd be Lions, Vikings, Packers, and the Bears. But just you mentioned 6-2 the rest of the stretch. Not to put you on the spot, I just wanted to pull up the schedule just in terms of where you look at how some of those games could flip. So, yeah, you go to Chicago, you host the 49ers and the Dolphins, you go to Detroit, you go to Seattle, you host the Saints, you wrap in Minnesota. I guess I know it's
they're losing to Detroit.
Yeah.
Right? They're losing that game.
Yeah.
I think that they will be favored against the 49ers. I think that they should absolutely beat the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Seattle in primetime is a tough game.
Yeah.
That's a tough game to me. So if I had to choose two, and look, it could I said no worse than 5-3. They could lose one, you know, to the 49ers at home. That could happen for sure. But if I had to, you know, choose two, they're losing to Detroit, and I think that the night game is Seattle. But they finished 6-2 down the stretch last year. I see no reason why they can't do that again. I think they're that kind of talented team.
Oh, yeah.
The question is, as you just – it's not a personnel issue. It's the execution. There's so many things, so many areas where they got to clean up execution. I think we'll find out really soon after this bye whether they're able to use that, because they're going to Chicago now, and that is a team that they should beat. And we'll see how they execute, right?
Is it too early for you to gauge or just your feelings on how that second half could play out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really look at it from a game-to-game standpoint, but what I do look at is positioning and where teams are now. And every team that they're chasing has the advantage on them, has a head-to-head advantage on them.
Right.
I mean, Philadelphia now is getting hot, and they have a head-to-head. So it's possible the best the Packers are going to be able to do is go on the road in the playoffs. And unless they become, you know, the hottest team in the league, and they can beat Detroit, they can beat Minnesota, they can beat San Francisco, and then they all they have to do is worry about Philadelphia. But even beating those teams doesn't guarantee them the division. Detroit still has a pretty good hold on the division. I don't think Detroit's schedule, as I recall, is all that hard. So to me, you know, the whole thing about the season is, yeah, you want to be really hot, but you got to get yourself some home games too.
Yeah.
And you know, who knows, if that San Francisco game had been at home last year, they might have won it. You never know. So it's just so hard to predict. Plus, the other thing is the Packers have just avoided catastrophic injuries. Everybody has had bad injuries. You know, Detroit lost Aiden Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. Minnesota lost Darisaw. You know, not to mention their rookie quarterback, who was supposed to be their starter.
Yeah. 49ers lost McCaffrey.
Yeah.
You know, they had lost him for a while.
Yeah. And so the Packers really haven't had that kind of an injury. So they, you know, that's to be seen, too. How will that affect them if someone else goes down? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and will Love stay healthy the whole year? Yeah. Is he ever going to get really healthy? And that'll be a big key too.
I would argue a little just that, no, it's not the same as losing Aiden Hutchinson. That's catastrophic for the season. It hasn't been a season. But having 9 games and playing 2.5 of them without Jordan Love, they've also overcome some injuries. I mean, that could have sunk their season out of the gate, and they were able to get through that and over that hurdle because of Malik Willis and the coaching staff building a game plan around him. It's not a season ender, and I agree that we don't, you know, when Jordan Love continues to have these injuries, 2 separate injuries missing time with in the first half of the season, obviously the Packers hope that stays, you know, he stays healthy in the back half, or else it could be a problem. But I think I would throw in that they've had some injuries to overcome too.
But they don't have any season endings those. You know, lose your left tackle is devastating, you know, and a really good one. And then, you know, of course, to lose Aiden Hutchinson, you know, is,
I guess
you don't need to say more than that.
Yeah, I guess for the Packers, the only guy that's been quote unquote a long term injury is Marshawn Lloyd.
Yeah,
pretty much
been the only guy.
That's right? A rookie. Yeah. And Musgrave.
Yeah, well, I would say he's been an IR because of that ankle. That's true. He's battled some injuries. So, yeah, and I pulled up the Lions schedule because it is interesting. They host Jacksonville. So I'm wondering if the Vikings game was a fluke for Jacksonville, or maybe they actually
I think the Vikings just aren't that good. That's just my opinion.
So that's one reason why I'm observing it. So you go to Indianapolis, which, I mean, that is what it is in Indy. You got the Bears twice. You got the Bills, the Packers, San Francisco, and the Vikings. So, I mean, very
it's not horrible.
No, it's very favorable for the Lions. You got
those teams at home, right? They have Minnesota at home, I believe.
Yeah, they close it out at home. They beat
Minnesota on the road.
Yeah. They're going to be the NFC one seed.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have home field advantage. The path to the Super Bowl in the NFC is going to go through Detroit.
That's true. Which is why I know sometimes maybe at the end of the season you might be thinking and looking back for the Packers thinking like, man, that Vikings game, why'd you start so slow? That Lions game, you should have tried to steal one at home because, you know, some of those type of games are just split. Like if you can steal one at home, lose it on the road, you know, you at least feel better. But if you drop both of those games, it just makes things much worse.
You throw five interceptions in a game and you still find a way to win.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It really is.
You know, and that's the sign of a really good team. And they were able to overcome it. The Packers couldn't overcome Jordan Love's really dumb interception against the Lions.
Yeah.
So, you know, that tells you a little bit about where each team is right now. But, you know, second half, you never know how that stuff plays out.
The thing that stood out to me as you were going down the tiebreakers, which I had not considered yet, and this is not some grand revelation, but it really, I think, emphasizes how important that 49ers game at home is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you think, okay, they've got four games against the division left, those are all obviously important, they're division games. But that 49ers might as well be a divisional team in terms of their significance, because you can't afford to lose any more head-to-head tiebreakers, and that's another team that you're going to be buying with.
Or NFC games.
Yeah.
They can't afford to lose. They've lost too many NFC games, you know, and that's tough. You know, they've cleaned up on the AFC
South. I would say they'd be high on the list at the AFC.
Yeah, like if they could play the AFC South, they'd be good all year.
Yes. And the other thing, too, is it's not like you can just assume the 49ers are winning the NFC West, because that's a logjam right now, right? Beating the Rams and beating the Cardinals from a head-to-head standpoint is obviously very significant, especially if the 49ers do win the NFC West. But if not, and that's another wild card team you're buying it out for, you can't drop any more head-to-heads.
True. But the Rams are getting healthier, too.
Yep.
That's one thing that stood out. So, yeah, it's going to be just really fascinating. Here's another point or something that we talked about, because we did it in, like, our question of the week. I always like those discussions, and I think it'd be another one worth kind of honing in on for the podcast. I know we talked a little bit about it previously when we looked at the interceptions, the drop passes, the penalties. I guess what is the major thing for you, like if they take out one of these and you keep the other two, if that makes sense, like if you only had penalties but you kept interceptions, drop passes, I guess what do you think is the number one major thing that they just have to get rid of from the list of interceptions, drop passes, and penalties?
Interceptions for me, but I look at it more as a whole, and I even added to the discussion they're 29th in red zone offense, and the 4-3 change up front on the defensive line. I think you add those two to the interceptions, the drop passes, the penalties, especially the 30 pre-snap penalties, which entering this past week was second in the NFL. Maybe I'm just being too optimistic, but I'm seeing a team that's done a whole lot wrong, that's still 6-3 and is very talented. And I'm giving them, because they're young, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that they can clean these things up. Matt LaFleur can repeat what he did last season when he coached this team up to its potential, and that it can finish strong. But if you're asking for the number one, and there's a lot to choose from, for me it's the interceptions. You can't keep giving the ball away. Those are killers, two pick sixes. And you've got a defense that takes the ball away, so every time you give it right back, you're negating what's been the strength of this defense, which is taking the football.
Yeah. What about for you, Sean?
Well, I was all in on interceptions until I saw the two games yesterday
where
the Vikings and Lions won despite all those interceptions. The Chiefs have been winning all year despite interceptions. I think I'll still go with interceptions because I think they've been pretty devastating for the Packers. Like they've been huge impact interceptions. Yeah. They haven't just been flipping field position. They've been touchdowns. They've resulted in touchdowns. They've, killed drives. I think that's probably still the number one thing, and it was what really propelled them last year, was that, you know, Love only threw like one interception in the last 8 games or something like that. And so, yeah, I would stick with that. The penalties, you know, the penalties and the drop passes are probably more of a focus issue. I think that the penalties have been reaction to some of the teams that they've been playing. You know, there have been some talented teams, some talented defenses that have forced them into holding penalties, false starts, things like that. So maybe that changes. Maybe they figure out, you know, better ways to do things. But yeah, I just, you know, they can't go on with the dropped interceptions, but the interceptions are worse. Yep.
Yeah. That's where I've been torn too, because you just brought up the great point with some of the interceptions. Like you said, it'd be different if Jordan Love's taking a heave at the end zone and it gets picked off. It's like, whatever. But some of the, you know, their pick sixes. He threw one, in Jacksonville, they had a short field, they went and scored. Like, you're putting your defense in just these horrible situations. So, if you can cut down on those, I think good things can happen. But I guess for the penalties, I mean, you mentioned one of the strengths for this team has been running the ball. You're not having much success if you're trying to run it on 2nd and 15 or right. 3rd and 12 or what have you. So, yeah, for me, it's like, if I guess 1A, 1B with interceptions, yeah, and penalties.
You're right. It's a much different game when you're not negating 10-yard runs, or you're 2nd and 5 instead of 2nd and 15.
Yeah.
So, or 1st and 15. So I agree that it's close.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, just as we near the end, just what are some final thoughts from you guys, and just takeaways? For me, I just look at the NFL. It feels open. Like, it doesn't feel like there's like a previous, you're like, okay, the Chiefs are going to cruise, or maybe this team is going to do something. Like, I just feel like there's a handful of teams that really have a shot at the Super Bowl. And I mean, maybe call me crazy, I don't think the Packers are that far from, like you say, the pack of those top dogs.
I don't think so either. I think right now, my preseason pick was Chiefs, Lions, and I feel pretty good about it. I'm not really itching to get off that spot. You know, those are to me the two best teams in the league. I think the Lions, if you look at the NFC, have separated themselves from everyone else. Now, it doesn't mean they'll win, because if there's two takeaways for me on the NFC, one, the Lions are clearly the best team, but two, there's a lot of really good teams in this conference. I mean, it's deep in a way that it hasn't been for a few years. It's deeper than it's been the past few seasons. So there's been plenty of years where it's like, okay, and a lot of times it's like the Packers or maybe this team. It's not really like that. There's a lot of crowd behind the Lions. And Packers are one of them. I'm going to be very curious to see how that sorts itself out. But because it's so close, like Spoon said, the tiebreakers are going to be important. But everyone's buying behind the Lions in the NFC. They're a different breed.
Yeah. Just final thoughts.
Yeah, the NFC is so much better. The only team that would scare me in the AFC is the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and because they have the best quarterback in the league and arguably the best coach in the NFL.
Yeah.
So, otherwise, in the AFC, everyone's got warts. You know,
Baltimore can't
stop the pass. You know, the Bills are, you know, they're good, but they're kind of up and down. Their defense can be kind of sketchy once in a while. You know, I don't even know in the AFC South who's worthy of anything.
Right.
Nobody.
No. Yeah. And Pittsburgh's getting better, but they're still not a dominant team.
How the Jets doing?
Yeah. Not too good.
Sorry, boys, I couldn't have.
Was that 31-6 final score?
Well, you say the AFC is so weak, and yet, my goodness, they can't even come close. It's bleak.
It is. And then, you know, I think the NFC, we already know, you know, the top four teams, arguably, but then the 49ers are going to come on, you know, now that McCaffrey's back and Debo Samuel's going to get healthy. You know, the only thing is they don't get Brandon Ayuk back. That's another team that had a devastating injury, you know, that the Packers have avoided. The Rams, you know, they're starting to get their guys back, and they look pretty formidable. And I wouldn't rule Seattle out yet either. So, and New Orleans, actually, Atlanta and New Orleans aren't bad. New Orleans has a terrible record, but, you know, they beat Atlanta. Atlanta's not a bad team. Atlanta can put some points on the board. So it's a good conference. You know, the NFC's been a bad conference for a long time, and now it's really kind of interesting to see it be dominant. And I didn't even mention Washington, Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, those are two good teams. So it's going to be a really good – it should be a really good playoff.
Yeah, the Eagles look good yesterday.
That's the thing to me is Washington and what Jaden Daniels has done. When you have a perennial also-ran that suddenly in a year turns into a potential contender, it changes the conference. And that's what you see in Washington right now is for the longest time, you have Washington on your schedule. That's a W, right? Now they're beating teams and taking names. A close loss, obviously, to the Steelers on Sunday, but that's a good Steelers team. It was a one-point loss with a rookie quarterback. What do we see from the Packers last year? First-year starter. You should only get better. I don't think it's fluky. And so that's a team that's perennially in the cellar, no longer is. It just makes it more crowded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So again, it's just been a very interesting just NFL to this half of the season, but it's just nice to watch how things are starting to come together. So that second half of the season is going to be a gauntlet for a lot of teams, and then it'll just be interesting to see if – I mean, yeah, the Chiefs, the Lions have been up there, but who maybe tries to separate even more from the Pack or who tries to make a run late like the Packers did last year and so many others. So it's going to be fun to see, but – that's going to be it for this podcast. We got plenty to talk about with the Bears throughout this week, and we'll be diving deeper into that matchup later on. And, well, of course, we'll have plenty of content on the Milwaukee Journal and PackerNews.com as we get ready for Sunday's game in Chicago. But thank you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. For Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.